dissidents among dissidents, ideology, politics, and left in post-Soviet Russia. That does it for our show. Check our website for jobs. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe.
You're listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM in the Portland area and all over the world at KBOO.FM.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available on our website at kboo.fm. Due to the temporary closure of in-station activity at KBOO, meetings will be conducted online via public video conferencing unless otherwise noted. A public link and phone number to attend the meetings are available on our website. The Program Advisory Committee meets quarterly on the second Tuesday of March, June, September, and December at 6 p.m. Please visit our website at kboo.fm to verify if a meeting is being held.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon's ban on real estate love letters is blocked by a preliminary injunction. People in the U.S. can now order four more free COVID tests online, and Ukraine rejects Russia's offer to evacuate civilians to Russia and Belarus. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Monday, March 7th, 2022. I'm Althea Billings. Gas prices in the Portland area are at near record highs and are expected to keep climbing due to the Russian invasion of Ukraine. According to AAA of Oregon and Idaho, last week the Oregon average price for regular gas rose 5 cents from $3.98 to $4.03. Russia is one of the top three oil producers in the world, along with the U.S. and Saudi Arabia. There are concerns that with the severe economic sanctions the U.S. and other Western nations have imposed, Russia could retaliate by withholding oil from the global market. Europe in particular depends on oil from Russia. The increase in price of oil has led to higher pump prices in the U.S., with gas prices climbing in all 50 states. The national average for regular gas jumped 9 cents to $3.62 a gallon. The states with the most expensive gas prices are California at $4.84 a gallon and Hawaii at $4.57 a gallon. The other states in the nation with averages above $4 a gallon are Oregon, Washington, and Nevada. AAA Public Affairs Director Marie Dodd said of the situation, quote, "Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the responding escalating series of financial sanctions by the U.S. and its allies have given the global oil market the jitters, with crude climbing above $100 per barrel. Like the U.S. stock market, the oil market responds poorly to volatility and the unknown." Russia has announced a ceasefire starting Monday morning in Ukraine and the opening of humanitarian corridors in several areas. The move comes one day after hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian civilians attempting to flee to safety were forced to shelter from Russian shelling that pummeled cities in Ukraine's center, north, and south. Later on Monday, Ukraine dismissed Russia's promise to allow its citizens to travel safely on designated routes to Russia or its close ally, Belarus. One Ukrainian official called it propaganda and an action not driven by humanitarian concerns. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky warned of a new wave of Russian attacks and criticized world leaders for not doing enough to protect his country. Zelensky has called for a no-fly zone to be established, a move that has been rejected by Kyiv's allies in the West over fears that it could send the conflict spiraling into a broader war between Moscow and NATO. The invasion is now in its 12th day. It's been condemned across the world, led to crippling sanctions on Russia, and has left Russian President Vladimir Putin increasingly isolated on the world stage. However, Putin has shown no sign of pulling back in the face of fierce resistance, as he warns the West against interference while escalating attacks on his democratic neighbor, Ukraine. Russia's currency, the ruble, tumbled on Monday morning as Western nations continue to put crippling sanctions on the country's financial sector. Putin has cracked down on dissent at home, as more than 5,000 demonstrators have been arrested in Russia since he ordered troops into Ukraine last week. The United Nations Refugee Agency said on Monday that 1.7 million people have fled Ukraine into neighboring countries since the conflict began. The UN has also said it has recorded 406 civilian deaths, including 27 children. Officials have said they believe the total number of people killed is in fact considerably higher. 2 years ago, Oregon reported its first presumptive case of COVID-19. Now doctors in the state say COVID is making progress toward an endemic state. Oregon reported 4,400 new COVID cases last week, down 29% from the previous week's tally. Across Oregon, cases fell in 32 of 36 counties. Still, 127 people were reported dead due to COVID-19 last week, bringing the state's death toll up to 6,709 people. Hospitalizations are showing signs of decline, but healthcare facilities in Oregon are still under significant strain. There is currently 10% availability of adult non-ICU beds and 16% availability of adult ICU beds in the state. Starting this Saturday, March 12th, Oregon, along with California and Washington, will lift its indoor mask mandate. School districts across the state will be allowed to decide whether or not to implement their own mask mandates. Both Portland Public Schools and Salem-Keizer Public Schools have said they will let students and staff decide whether or not to wear masks starting Monday, March 14th. Other school districts in the state are still deciding. Oregon Governor Kate Brown also announced this week that she is dropping an order requiring state employees to be vaccinated. As President Biden announced in his State of the Union address last week, people in the U.S. can now order four more free at-home rapid COVID-19 antigen tests from covidtest.gov. The program, run in partnership with the U.S. Postal Service, began during the Omicron surge in December. To get the free tests, Americans can go to covidtest.gov and order four tests per residential address. Households that already received a package of tests from the site are eligible to request a new one. In his speech, Biden also announced a test-to-treat program at pharmacies, enabling pharmacists to issue prescriptions for antiviral pills on the spot for people who test positive for COVID-19. People in Oregon, California, and Washington will not be required to wear masks indoors starting on Saturday. The transition could create anxiety for some after more than 2 years of guarding their health during the pandemic. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story.
Mask requirements are coming to an end in Washington State on Saturday, more than 2 years into the COVID-19 pandemic. But the transition could be stressful for some. Dr. Trenton James, a psychiatrist for Kaiser Permanente in Seattle, says stress, fear, and exhaustion are normal responses to this health crisis. He says people shouldn't ignore the strain the pandemic has put on mental health and can take care of themselves in other ways to help alleviate that stress.
Identify good self-care routines and stick to them. You know, I often encourage my patients to be kind to yourself and focus on the basics, like going for daily walks, even being able to go outside and enjoy the sunshine when we do get it, and breathing in fresh air.
Washington, California, and Oregon have all decided to lift mask requirements for indoor settings on Saturday. The CDC also has revised its recommendations, saying people who aren't in counties with high transmission rates can go without masks. But Kaiser Permanente and other hospitals in the Evergreen State still are recommending that people wear masks in crowded settings and public indoor spaces. James says many folks are feeling COVID fatigue, and some are even angry at the policies designed to keep people safe. He describes these as typically secondary expressions that stem from fear, anxiety, and depression.
Another really important thing is just to be able to seek out help when you're overwhelmed. And there's a lot of uncertainty right now, but keeping in mind that this won't last forever.
James says it's also important to keep in mind that official guidance on masks and other safety policies could evolve as the pandemic continues. So people should follow the latest guidance from state and federal authorities. For Washington News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
A federal judge blocked Oregon's ban on so-called real estate love letters on Friday. District Judge Marco Hernandez granted a preliminary injunction that prohibits Oregon from enforcing a law against love letters to home sellers. The judge said Oregon House Bill 2550 likely violates the First Amendment rights of real estate agents. The 2021 law was the first of its kind in the nation. It prohibited buyers from providing love letters and personal photographs to home sellers as a way to improve their chances of getting the house they want. Supporters of the bill say these letters perpetuate housing discrimination by revealing a buyer's race, religion, sexual orientation, or marital status. Shortly after the law passed, the conservative Pacific Legal Foundation filed a lawsuit on behalf of the Bend-based Total Real Estate Group, alleging that forbidding these communications violated their First Amendment rights. Judge Hernandez's legal opinion acknowledges Oregon's, quote, long and abhorrent history of racist housing discrimination. He points to laws that outright prohibited people of color from owning land in Oregon, as well as governmental policies and industry practices that continue to enable housing discrimination to this day. However, Hernandez said he did not think the bill could stand against a First Amendment claim in court, mostly because it is too broad. Instead of specifically prohibiting love letters, the law bans all written communication outside of, quote, customary documents. The law doesn't specify what those customary documents include. Hernandez suggests two alternatives that were originally included in Pacific Legal Foundation's claim. Lawmakers could allow love letters but require real estate agents to edit out any information that could reveal the buyer's race, religion, sexual orientation, or marital status. On top of that, lawmakers could prohibit buyers from providing personal photos to sellers. With this preliminary injunction, House Bill 2550 can't be enforced until Hernandez makes a final decision. Oregon lawmakers adjourned the 2022 short legislative session on Friday after passing various legislation. Bills passed include overtime pay for farm workers, $600 stimulus payments for low-income workers, and a $400 million spending package focused on affordable housing and houselessness. Republicans, who are in the minority in both chambers, had argued that lawmakers should have focused on addressing budget fixes and technical issues from previous years. One of the bills Republicans specifically criticized for being a big issue, they said should be saved for long sessions that only occur during odd-numbered years, requires farm workers be paid 1.5 times their normal rate once they work more than 40 hours a week. The bill passed on party lines. Some of the other notable bills that passed this session include heat relief for vulnerable Oregonians, protections for election workers, setting up rulemaking for private forest accord, and giving nurses access to a program that provides mental health and wellness support. Lawmakers passed a $300 million investment focused on supporting school staff and students. The funds will go toward a summer learning program and activities for K-12 students, addressing the workforce shortage and supporting school districts impacted by wildfires. Lawmakers also passed a $100 million investment to expand access to affordable childcare. In addition, this session there was a wave of new leadership. The House elected a new speaker, Dan Rayfield. The Democrat from Corvallis replaced longtime House Speaker Tina Kotek, who stepped down to focus on her campaign for governor. Democratic Representative Julie Fahey became the new House Majority Leader. Republican Representative Vicky Breeze Iverson became the new House Minority Leader. And Senator Tim Knopp is the new Republican leader for the Senate. This was also the last session for Governor Kate Brown, who is term limited, as well as Senator Peter Courtney, a Salem Democrat who is Oregon's longest serving state lawmaker with 38 years. Senator Courtney said, quote, "You can fight all over the place and you can get angry, but you'll get the job done, and that's exactly how I described what happened this session." A measure passed in the Oregon legislature would allow nursing students to become licensed to perform certain tasks in a hospital. It's seen as a way to provide more nurses as the state faces a shortage. Eric Tegedoff has more.
Oregon lawmakers have concluded the legislative session with a measure aimed at alleviating the state's nursing shortage. In its final week, the legislature passed House Bill 4003, a measure that will allow nursing students to gain a license so they can work with limited duties and gain experience in hospitals. Idaho and Washington already have similar nurse intern licenses. Jana Bitten, who heads the Oregon Center for Nursing, says there was a shortage of nurses before the pandemic, but COVID-19 has made the problems worse.
A lot of people that I've talked to within the nursing community and outside of the nursing community all have horror stories of themselves or a family member or a friend who's become ill with COVID or with something else, and having to go to the emergency room and sitting through extraordinarily long waits to be able to see a provider.
Bitten says the shortage is greater in certain work settings and rural parts of the state. Some critics have balked at the idea of student nurses providing care. The Oregon Nursing Association says the bill is a great first step, but more is needed to alleviate the shortage. Bitten says the newly created license will also help ensure that future nurses can support themselves.
That licensure is really going to help nursing students who need to get a place where they can practice their skills while they're in school, give them an opportunity to make money and support their education, but it will also help workplaces enhance their workforce.
The bill also expands a wellness program to register nurses so they can access free therapy sessions. Bitten says the pandemic and other events like wildfires have taken a mental toll on nurses. For Oregon News Service, I'm Eric Tegedoff.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for an encore broadcast of my interview with author Tom Hartman about his new book, The Hidden History of Big Brother in America, How the Death of Privacy and the Rise of Surveillance Threaten Us and Our Democracy. The book will be launching at Powell's tomorrow, March 8th. Then at 6, stick around for Labor Radio. At 6:30, it's Prison Pipeline. And at 7, let's talk about race. Tonight's weather will be cloudy with a low of 40 degrees. Tomorrow will be rainy with a high of 47. Today in history, in 1965, a 600-person civil rights demonstration in Selma, Alabama ends in violence when marchers are attacked and beaten by white state troopers and sheriff's deputies. The violence was broadcast on TV and recounted in newspapers, spurring demonstrations in 80 cities across the nation within days. The events became known as Bloody Sunday. The quote of the day is from Baptist minister and leader of the civil rights movement, Dr. Martin Luther King, who said, quote, "There comes a time when one must take a position that is neither safe nor politic nor popular, but he must take it because conscience tells him it's right." The world urges Russia to have caution around Ukrainian nuclear plants. Wisconsin redistricting may head to the Supreme Court, and Florida plans a so-called election crimes agency. With more on these stories, it's Jonah Chester with 2022 Talks.
Welcome to 2022 Talks, where we are following our democracy in historic times.
Russia's reckless operation around the Zaporizhzhia nuclear power plant risked a catastrophe, a nuclear incident.
Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke for many nations when warning about fighting around Ukraine's nuclear plants. Russia seized Europe's largest nuclear power station last week. At an Emergency Security Council meeting Friday, UN Ambassador Linda Thomas-Greenfield called that, quote, incredibly reckless.
And it threatened the safety of civilians across Russia, Ukraine, and Europe.
Thomas Greenfield urged Russia to withdraw from the plant, allow medical treatment for injured personnel, and permit full access to the site. Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky held a virtual meeting Saturday with 300 members of Congress as lawmakers consider a White House request for $6.4 billion in aid. A ban on Russian oil imports is on the table. The U.S. may also provide replacements for Polish Soviet-era fighter jets that nation might send to its neighbor. The House passed a bipartisan resolution of support for Ukraine Friday. Representative Gregory Meeks, a New York Democrat and chair of the Foreign Affairs Committee, introduced the measure.
Vladimir Putin has launched an unjustifiable, senseless war on a peaceful, sovereign nation.
Reuters reports at least 9,000 people have died from the violence and roughly 1.5 million people have been displaced. As the U.S. considers banning Russian oil imports, AAA reports prices at the pump have hit their highest point in over a decade, clocking in at just over $4 a gallon on average. In Wisconsin, the legislature's Republican leadership is asking the U.S. Supreme Court to review that state's redistricting battle. The move comes after the Wisconsin Supreme Court approved a voting map submitted by Democratic Governor Tony Evers. That map would shrink, but not eliminate, the GOP's control of the legislature. Deborah Cronmiller with the League of Women Voters of Wisconsin says the Evers map is a bittersweet victory, since the state court previously ruled any new map would need to closely adhere to the state's current one.
Using the least change approach meant all of us who submitted maps for consideration were kind of boxed into a map that would retain certain amount of partisan gerrymander.
According to the Poynter Institute, Wisconsin's current voting lines are some of the most gerrymandered in the nation. They were drawn behind closed doors in 2011 and adopted when the GOP controlled both the legislature and governor's seat. The Florida State Senate has approved a measure establishing a new election crimes agency. According to the New York Times, it would be the first such state agency if approved by the House and Governor Ron DeSantis. According to the Associated Press, vote fraud is extremely rare. The AP confirmed fewer than 500 potential fraud cases out of 25 million ballots cast across six states, not including Florida. I'm Jonah Chester for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our eight trust indicators to support transparency and accuracy at publicnewsservice.org.
President Biden mentions tribal communities just once in his State of the Union address. More potential graves have been found at a former residential school in Alberta, Canada, and some student fans hurled racist remarks at players from Alaska's only reservation during a high school basketball game. With more on those stories, it's Antonia Gonzalez with National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. President Biden mentioned tribal communities during a State of the Union speech Tuesday night when talking about providing high-speed internet for every American. While that was the only direct reference to tribes, many issues the president addressed are priorities for Native communities, from COVID-19 recovery, veterans affairs, job creation, to strengthening the Violence Against Women Act. The Native American congressional delegation had mixed reactions to the speech. Democratic Congresswoman Sharice David said she's ready to work on a bipartisan level in her statement following the address. Republican Congressmen Tom Cole and Mark Wayne Mullen were more critical. Mullen in a statement said President Biden is taking the country in the wrong direction. More potential graves have been found at the site of a former residential school in Canada, this time in Alberta. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, a Northern First Nation says 169 possible graves were found.
In addition to the ground-penetrating radar, a specialized drone was used to find the evidence of the graves at what was once a mission site at Gruard. The project was led by the Archaeology Department of the University of Alberta. The initial report shows that investigators discovered 129 probable graves and 40 possible graves over a one-acre site. Most of the graves were in the community cemetery. The former St. Bernard Mission School was run by the Catholic Church from 1894 to 1961. Testimony before the Truth and Reconciliation Commission suggested abuse and manual labor. Chief Sidney Halcrow is the chief of the Capawino First Nation.
The grief we felt when discovering our stolen children has opened fresh wounds. We remember the desolation of our people felt when our children were forcibly removed from their families, communities, to be placed in Indian residential schools.
Halcrow said only 1 acre of the site was investigated. He says the First Nation now has a long journey ahead to find answers to what happened to the children who never made it home from the St. Bernard Mission School. He said once that happens, the community can begin to heal. Halcrow also thanked the elders and survivors who told stories about what happened at the school. Truths, he said, that were not believed for many, many years. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
Some student fans hurled racist remarks and sounds at players from Alaska's only reservation during a February 5th high school basketball game. That's according to an investigation. Eric Stone reports from Ketchikan.
The unnamed Ketchikan student's behavior has, quote, been handled according to the district's student disciplinary policy, according to the district. No further details were provided. The statement makes no mention of any action against employees. The school district launched its investigation after photos circulated of Ketchikan High School Pep Club members dressed in cowboy hats, plaid shirts, and other Western wear at a basketball game against Metlakatla High School. Eyewitnesses also reported they heard stereotypical war cries from the Ketchikan crowd. Pep Club members denied making racist remarks and sounds. The incident sparked an outcry around the state. Tribal leaders and community members said they took the students' country dress as a Cowboys and Indians theme, playing on atrocities committed against Indigenous people. The district's statement says Pep Club students did not intend to cause harm with the country theme night, but the school district says the effect of the theme was predictable and should have been prevented. The district offered an apology to Metlakatla students, coaches, parents, and the community as a whole, along with the investigation's findings. The school district also apologized to Native communities around the state. The school district said it would institute a new plan for selecting future Pep Club themes, conduct a racial equity audit of district policies, and provide training, among other things. The superintendent of Metlakatla School District said he was pleased the process was moving forward. For National Native News, I'm Eric Stone in Ketchikan.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
A new startup is working to develop solid-state battery technology. Solid-state batteries for electric vehicles could store more energy more safely. Dr. Anthony Leisowitz has more with Climate Connections.
I'm Dr. Anthony Leisowitz, and this is Climate Connections. Many consumers want electric cars that cost less and go farther on a single charge. Researchers hope to make that happen by developing what are known as solid-state batteries. As their name suggests, solid-state batteries contain solid instead of liquid electrolytes. Amy Prieto of Prieto Battery says that does two things.
It lets you store more energy in a smaller volume, but it also makes the batteries a lot safer because that liquid is usually flammable.
But developing solid-state technology is challenging.
And there are some really fundamental material science problems that people have been working on for a really long time that are just very difficult to solve.
Prieto's approach is to combine the compounds needed to make a battery in a unique structure.
Instead of thin films that get stacked or rolled the way a normal battery is made, we are starting with a spongy structure that's really porous, and that way we can pack a lot of the different components of the battery into that architecture.
The company has created a working prototype. Like many other battery startups, it's not yet ready for commercialization. But if solid-state batteries eventually do make it to the mass market, the technology could revolutionize the electric car industry. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To hear more stories like this, visit climateconnections.org.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Monday, March 7th, 2022. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news, stories, and tips at 971-245-2158. The producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Lily Bolke, Jonah Chester, Antonia Gonzalez, Eric Tagadoff, and Dr. Anthony Leisowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Althea Billings. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO, at 8, it's Too Much Information with Abe and Tracy, covering politics and current events while taking listener calls. At 9, it's Alternative Radio, featuring lectures and interviews with progressive thinkers. At 10, it's Flashpoints, investigative news radio with host Dennis Bernstein. At 11, it's Times Like Now with Trevor Collins. Then at 11:30, it's Art Focus. Host Joseph Gallivan interviews photographer Jess T. Dugan about their show, To Survive on the Shore, photographs and interviews with transgender and gender nonconforming older adults, on now at Portland State University. All of these KBOO programs, including the evening news, are made possible by support from our members. If you'd like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kabu.fm/give or text KABU to 44321. Stay tuned now for an encore broadcast of my interview with author Tom Hartman about his new book, The Hidden History of Big Brother in America, How the Death of Privacy and the Rise of Surveillance Threaten Us and Our Democracy. Stay with us.
KABU News In Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KABU News In Depth. I'm Althea Billings. Internet companies scoop up a lot of data on their users. The saying goes, if you're not paying for the product, you are the product. And the outcome isn't just really specifically targeted ads. It can also result in behavioral control and serious threats to democratic norms. Today, we're speaking with progressive radio host Tom Hartman, who's the author of the new book, The Hidden History of Big Brother in America, How the Death of Privacy and the Rise of Surveillance Threatens Us and Our Democracy. The book launches at Powell's on Tuesday, March 8th at 5 p.m. Thanks for taking the time to speak with me today. I enjoyed reading your most recent book, The Hidden History of Big Brother in America, How the Death of Privacy and the Rise of Surveillance Threaten Us and Our Democracy. But I gotta say, it's put me a bit on edge. It comes out on March 8th, and there are so many critical pieces of information in there. Like, even if you followed privacy, surveillance, data mining, all of this kind of stuff, seeing it all in one place really, like, paints the whole picture. So I want to start with the idea of Big Brother, right? That's the title of the book, which comes from George Orwell's 1984. Why did you decide to use that term to characterize the loss of privacy and surveillance phenomena that you describe in the book?
That's a great question. First of all, because it's a term that everyone's familiar with. It doesn't require a lot of explanation. But secondly, because it evokes the notion of a large power overseeing all of us, essentially. It's also why I opened the book with the story of slavery in the South and the persecution of women in the North.